We're doing Parshat Vayeshev. So we'll do a quick overview. Our Parsha recounts how there's infighting in Yaakov's home. Yosef brings home bad stories about his brothers. Yaakov has a special relationship with Yosef. He makes him a special coat. And the brothers take note of this and they hate him. And Yosef has dreams in which he tells his brothers how they're making piles in the field, and his pile stood up and their piles bowed down to him, and they ask him, what do you think, you're going to be boss over us, you're going to be king over us? And they hate him even more. And he has another dream, and he tells his brothers, I had a dream about a sun and a moon and 11 stars all bowing to me. He tells his father, and his father yells at him in front of all the brothers, you really think we're all going to come bow to you? And his brothers are still jealous of him, but his father remembers the dreams, and his father gives weight to the dreams. And we discussed that Yaakov Avinu's journey begins with dreams and ends with dreams. We're going to see Yaakov's journey is filled with dreams. The brothers go to graze their sheep out in Shechem, which is very strange. What are they doing out in Shechem? They just killed out the city. And Yaakov is worried. He sends Yosef and to see how they're doing. And Yosef goes, and he can't find them. He meets a man in the field, and he tells the man, I'm looking for my brothers. And the man tells him, I heard him saying they're going to Dotan. Now that's very strange. The man happened to hear the brothers. Who is the man? And Yosef goes after them. And when they see him from afar, they decide they're going to kill him. Tribes of Israel are going to kill, murder. They just went on a fantastic war, a vendetta to protect the seven Noahide laws. And one of them is thou shalt not kill. And they're ready to kill their own brother. So they say to one another, there's the dreamer. Let's kill him, throw him in a pit. We'll just say that a wild animal ate him. And then we'll see what happens with his dreams. And Reuven hears, Reuven's the big brother. He saves him and he says, what? We're not going to kill him. He says, don't spill blood, throw him here into a pit that's in the desert, and don't extend your hand against him. He wants to save him. His thoughts are to bring him back home. And when Yosef gets there, the brothers undress him, and they throw him into the pit, and they sit down to eat, and they see a caravan of Yishmaelites coming, and they're carrying all kinds of perfume, all kinds of spices. And Yehuda says to his brothers, what benefit, what money are we going to make over letting him just die? Let's sell him to the Yishmaelim. Why should we cause his death? At the end of the day, he is our brother, he is our flesh. And the brothers accept. So they pull Yosef out of the pit, they sell him to the Yishmaelim for 20 silver coins, and Yosef is brought down to Egypt. Reuven comes that night. It seems he wasn't around. The Torah doesn't tell us where he was. He comes to the pit and Yosef's not there. He tears his clothing and he says, the kid's gone. What am I going to do? So they take Yosef's garment and they dip it in goat's blood and they send it to their father saying, this is what we found. Do you recognize it? Is it your son's garment or not? And he says, yes, it is. A wild animal must have eaten him. Yosef has been torn to bits. And he tears his clothing, and he weeps and mourns his son for the next 22 years. And everyone tries to atone him, everyone tries to appease him, to comfort him. And he says, nope, I'm going to go to the grave, mourning over him. And Yosef is sold into Egypt, into slavery. All the brothers demote Yehuda. You are the boss, you could have told us to bring him back. What a bad idea. Look at how dad's suffering. And Yehuda loses his status as leader, and Yehuda goes into business. He marries the daughter of a Canaanite named Shua, and he has three children, Er, Onan, Shelah. He brings them a good shidduch, a pious woman named Tamar. Er marries her, and he doesn't allow her to get pregnant. He uses some form of birth control, and that's why he dies. Onan marries her. He uses birth control, and he dies. And so Yehuda thinks there must be something wrong with this woman. How come all my kids are dying when they marry her? He tells her, wait, my little Shayla is not old enough yet. And she catches on after a time that he's just pushing her off. So in those days, the custom was that a relative had to marry the widow of someone who passed away. It didn't have to be specifically a brother. It could have been the father. And so when she hears that Yehuda's wife died, and now he's going up to shear his sheep, so she gets all dressed up, and in those days when a woman was a widow, she wore black, and now she gets all dressed up in colorful clothing, and she sits there on the path, and when Yehuda sees her, so Yehuda says, he asks her, "Why? Let me be with you." And he doesn't know it's her. Well, how come he doesn't know it's her? Doesn't recognize his own daughter-in-law? It tells us something about Yehuda. So... okay, so maybe the women of ill repute of those days would keep their faces covered, right? That's the simple reading of the story. That the women of ill repute, because they were hired by their own father, mother, sister, brother, whatever, so no one wanted to know who she was. That wasn't relevant. What?
These women were also respected, even though they did wasn't a good profession. I heard a shiur where they said that even though these women weren't, their profession wasn't a good profession, they're respected, they were still held in a high esteem.
I'm unaware of that. I don't know. That I don't know. Okay.
Yeah. Maybe
you're confusing with concubine. Oh, no. Okay, yes, Eitan. Chaim, I'm sorry.
I think I might have read a Rashi on this, that Tamar always covered her face.
Right.
She was at home, so when she went out to the street, she uncovered it, so, and you would never recognize her.
Right, that's Rashi. Right, very good. Yeah.
You're saying also that Yehuda didn't look at her when she was in the. Is that also why he didn't recognize her? Is it?
Right, would seem to go hand in hand. Right. Yeah.
I mean, like, obviously, I'm thinking there's something that I'm not catching here, because like, two guys just died for using birth control, which in some cases is permitted to couples. So you read this, you're like, oh, that's it. You know. We must never ever use birth control under payment debt, because, you know...
We'll see.
So, I mean, what is it, like, you know, that's so different in their case, that they died and other people don't?
We could strengthen the question, but why don't we do that when we learn it in depth? Let's finish our quick overview, then remind me when we learn in depth, we'll add a few questions to your questions. And then we'll try to answer all of them, okay? She tells him, what will you give me? So he says, I'll send you sheep. I'll send you a young sheep. She says, give me collateral. Yeah, so what's the collateral you want? So he says, I want your signet ring. She says, I want your wrap. I want your staff. And he gives it to her. And then he's with her. She goes back home, changes her clothing. Yehuda sends what he promised with his friend. Notice he's not going back there again. Why didn't he go deliver it? He's into asking favors, or maybe he thought, I shouldn't have done it in the first place. I'm not going to risk falling for that one again. So he sends it with his friend, and they can't find her, obviously. They ask the people around. He asks, where's the woman that frequents this stop? And they say, no, no such woman here. So he comes back to Yehuda, says, couldn't find her. And they say, that's not a place where there's a specific woman. So Yehuda says, okay, what can I do? Let her keep my stuff. I don't want to be shamed. I don't want to be shamed. Okay. Interesting. Where else do we have that same word of booze? Who else says mocked something, shamed something? Esav. Esav, when he messed up and forwent his rights to the firstborn, Esav scorned it and said, everyone can hear about it. I don't care. Yehuda did something here and he says, no. Let's not let people hear about it. We don't need to mock or shame what's happened here. I did mine. What?
So booze means shame?
Yeah, shame, mocked, yeah. So 3 years, 3 months later, he hears Tamar's pregnant, and Yehuda says, okay, let her be taken out and be burnt. Be burnt, okay? So that was the custom in those days, that if a daughter-in-law who was waiting for someone to marry her in the family had an illicit relationship, she gets burnt. So she doesn't say, hey, you hypocrite. She, you know, wait a second, I didn't do anything wrong, but you. Okay, she doesn't do that. She sends him the all the signs he gave her, right? His signet, his wrap, his staff. And she says, Hakir no? Same words he used with his father. When he brought his father that Yosef's torn, bloody garment, he asked him, Hakir no? Could you please recognize this? So now she uses the same term back to him. Hakir no? Could you please recognize this? And Yehuda recognizes. And Yehuda says, she's right, I'm wrong. And Yehuda confesses. He says, I'm the one who did it. And instead of having her burn and save face, he stands up publicly and says, Tamar is perfectly right, I'm the one who's wrong, it's my child. And saves her life and the two kids' lives. And then the twins are born, one sticks out his hand first, they wrap a ribbon around his hand, they call him Peretz, and the first one to be born is Peretz, he breaks his way out, but the one who stuck his hand out is called Zorach, because he has the shiny ribbon. Yosef is taken down to Egypt. Potiphar purchases him because two understandings. Okay, many understandings. Whatever. We'll discuss it in depth. And Yosef is exceptionally successful. And he's starting to look after his looks. And the master's wife is interested in him. And he refuses. And he says, how could I do that? It's not right. He's been so good to me and I'll be unfaithful. And then one day they all go out to worship the Nile rising. And she tries to catch him. And he's wearing a robe, nothing underneath. She grabs the robe. He slips out of the robe. And he's left naked, runs out to the street. So he's out in the street naked. He's got nothing to say or do. Can't go back into the house. So she quickly calls everyone and says, look what's going on here. Didn't you all hear me yell? No one heard her yell. She didn't yell. She says, he tried to come and do things that are improper with me. And I yelled. And then he ran. And I grabbed his garment. And that's when he fled. So when the master comes home, she waits until they're being intimate that night. And then she says, gee, the same place your hand is right now, his hand was. The same thing you're doing, he's doing. Everything you're doing, he was trying to do just this morning. And she waited to get him, to be most zealous, most jealous. And she says to him, I understand that's what you brought him here for. I was wailing and then he ran and I had his garment. And that's why his garment's still here, because he came in here ready to do everything. Right. So according to the Medrash, he was a eunuch. So then that's not. Those two are conflicting in Drashim, right? There's a Medrash that says Potiphar actually bought him for his looks. Potiphar meant to rape him every night. Then according to that Medrash, that Gemara says that then Potiphar was castrated. And then he became a eunuch.
But he probably didn't believe the story anyway.
So then a strange thing happens. He puts him in the VIP ward in prison. Why? Because when he was judged, the judges, the Egyptian priests, said, we want to see the garment. And when they looked at the garment, they examined where the garment was frayed. And they said, well, according to your story, he kept trying to advance and you kept pushing him away. So then the neck and the front should be frayed because he's pushing against the front and you're pushing him away. And according to his version, that you kept pulling and he kept pulling back. So then the back of the neckline should be frayed. So they sat and they brought it to their forensic experts and they said, his story matches up. Your story's not true. So that's not what Potiphar wanted to hear. The Medrash says there was a child in the room that couldn't talk. And the baby opened its mouth and started talking and said, that's not what happened, that's not true. I was there. She started up with him, she chased after him. So Potiphar wasn't happy. Potiphar wasn't happy with the story, but he can't let his wife be shamed. So what does he do? He puts Yosef in prison. But Yosef's okay. So he puts him in the VIP prison. So everyone's talking in Egypt. What a terrible guy Yosef is. Look at this guy, he was treated so well, and look what he did. So Yosef in prison, right away, the head of the prison sees that Yosef knows what he's doing and he can be trusted. And he leaves Yosef in charge of the prison. Yosef has all the keys and he's the waiter for all the prisoners, all these VIP prisoners. And then at the end of the parasha, the two officers of Egypt, the one in charge of the cupbearer of the king and the baker, they sinned. The cupbearer had a fly in his wine he was bringing and the baker had a rock in his bread, and they were both incarcerated in this VIP prison. They both had a dream, and Yosef interpreted the dream. The cupbearer had a dream that there was a grapevine, and there were three tendrils and he had Pharaoh's cup in his hand, and he took the grapes and pressed them into the cup and put the cup on Pharaoh's hand. So Yosef told him the interpretation is the three tendrils correspond to 3 days, and in 3 days, Pharaoh will lift you up and put you back on your post. But please remember me when you get there, because I did nothing wrong. I was kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews. I did nothing wrong over here that I'm in this pit. Help me get out of here. And then the baker comes in and says, wow, what a good interpretation. I also had a dream. 3 wicker baskets on my head, and the top basket had all kinds of food for Pharaoh, and the birds were eating from that top basket. So Joseph said, well, the interpretation is the 3 baskets are 3 days, and in 3 days, Pharaoh will take your head off of you, and you're going to hang on a tree, and birds will eat your flesh. 3 days later, Pharaoh's birthday, and the dreams come true. And the baker is hung, and the cupbearer is reinstated, and he hates Yosef, and he won't remember him. He refuses to remember him because he disdains this Hebrew who put him back on his post. And now we begin our parsha. So, in order to understand our parsha, we need to understand many things. Number one, we have a tradition that a dream goes by the interpretation. A dream, some dreams stem from indigestion, and some dreams actually have meaning. Most of our dreams stem from indigestion. Then there are those dreams that have meaning. And those dreams, well, you have to be the right person. But if the right person interprets it, then the dream goes after the interpretation. And that's why Chazal said, when you have a dream, don't tell anyone. You tell the dreams, who knows how they'll interpret it. The best you can do is we have in the back of the Siddur, Atavat Chalom, where you go to 3 friends, and they basically tell you it's a good dream, it should turn out for good, God should make it good. They don't even hear the dream. But the idea is that we don't know how to interpret dreams, and the Talmud tells us on slight nuances, whether you're walking next to the horse or riding on the horse, could be a world of a difference. One rabbi had a dream, he had no feet. So they told him, what a great dream. What do you mean it's a great dream? I dreamt I have no feet. They said, right, it means from now on you're going to be so wealthy, you won't have to walk anywhere. You're going to have rides everywhere. You're going to have servants carrying you everywhere. Okay, we wouldn't know that's the interpretation of the dream. We don't know how to interpret dreams. So at any rate, the tradition we have, and if you want, look in our Ein Yaakov classes, we have a long, long story. The Talmud goes through about 3 pages discussing dreams and their interpretations. So over there we have the famous story of Bar Hedya, the dream interpreter, who knew this secret, that all the dreams go by their interpretation. And the Talmud gives us fantastic stories about Abaye and Rava, who were best friends and relatives, and they both had identical dreams, and he'd interpret it one way for Abaye and one way for Rava, and they both came true, because the dream goes by the interpretation. So,
why did Yosef give a bad interpretation?
That's a good question. That deserves a long answer. Maybe we'll get there. Maybe not. Probably not. So Yaakov has 12 children, and one is smarter than all the rest. One is deeper than all the rest. One can understand what all the rest can't. Remember, Yaakov keeps being led in life. He didn't want the blessings his mother pushed him into. He didn't want to leave his father's house. His parents kicked him out. He didn't want to marry 2 wives. Love and swindles him into it. He didn't want to have another 2 wives. His wife forced him into it. Yaakov keeps being led. What did Yaakov want in life? He wanted Rachel. He wanted Yosef. He wanted Binyamin. And everything else was baggage he didn't ask for. So God told him he's supposed to have 12 children. Fine. But if we think for a second, wait a second, Yaakov didn't want everything else. And yet he treated his wives well. It says he loved Leah. It says he loved his children. And he buys everyone the same thing. And Yosef, who's a poor orphan, who's growing up without a mother. So Yosef is given a little extra attention. Can we really fault Yaakov in that? Wouldn't you also say if Yaakov came to you as a parent and asked you, you know, I have 2 kids who are orphans. And I have a big house, I have 12 kids, and every other kid is growing up with a mother. Don't you think Yosef needs a little extra attention, a little shot in the arm? And you see, all the brothers are treating him badly. What?
Also Binyamin.
Also Binyamin, right? So Chazal tell us, even so. Lo'olam al yishane adam b'no ben abanim. Person should never treat a child differently. He should treat them all as equals. So give them all extra attention. But don't treat one different. Yosef gets the same jacket as everyone else, but his has a little red stripe around the sleeve. That's enough to drive the other brothers into jealousy. Now, The question is, where was their jealousy stemming from? So we have to understand where they're coming from. They know Avram had one son who was the chosen. And the other one was sent away with gifts, but he's not the continuation of the dynasty. Yitzchak had two sons. Yaakov is told, you're the continuation of God's chosen people. You're the continuation of being God's servant. And Esav, well, al harbecha tichye, you're going to be a good warrior. You're going to have your territory. Now what do the brothers see? They see Yosef is being treated, Yosef is being taught what they're not being taught. Yosef is being treated as the chosen one. So they've already seen this thing play itself out before. They've seen where Avram took a wife and the other one was not a wife, even though he ultimately married her. Yitzchak took a wife and one son wasn't in, the other son was in. And then they learned from their father. Their father said, if my dad doesn't understand what's really going on over here, then I have to step forward and do something. So yeah, Yitzchak thought, Esav's the one to get the blessings. Along comes Yaakov and usurps him. So now his children see that Yaakov is treating Yosef special. Yosef is being taught what the others are not being taught. So Yaakov has already been told. When Yaakov left Israel and he set the 12 stones around his head and he has the dream, he's being told these 12 tribes are going to remain till the end of time. No one can abolish the 12 tribes. There will always be 12 tribes in Israel. But the brothers don't know that. They're going to reach that conclusion on their own after they try to extinguish one of the tribes and they're unsuccessful. But part of the reason that Yaakov can't be comforted is because Yaakov says, if Yosef's gone, my job in the world is gone. My task was to bring 12 tribes and they were supposed to be the continuation of Avram and Yitzchak. What now? I don't know what now, but I'm a failure. If I lost one son, I'm a failure. So to Yaakov, all 12 are important. But what do the brothers see? Yosef's coming to his dad. And he continually tells him about how the brothers are wrong. And Yaakov trusts Yosef. He even appoints Yosef in charge of them and gives them preferential treatment. And so Yosef hears from his father, and Yosef reports to his father. Yosef tells his father, you know, they're mistreating the sons of the maids. And Yosef tries to befriend them. The hallmark of a true leader. He helps those that are on the bottom rung. Now the brothers hate him more. When Reuven comes and switches his father's bed, who's the one that reports it to Yaakov? Yosef does. And what does Yaakov respond? Yaakov takes the rights to the firstborn from Reuven and gives it to Yosef. So now Reuven and all the brothers, what do they see? Yosef just got the rights to the firstborn, and by telling his father what Reuven did wrong, Yosef ends up on top. Yosef, his intentions are for the sake of heaven, but he's making mistakes. Yosef has a dream. What?
I was going to say, was it because he knew that there was going to be a Mashiach in Yosef, so this is why he could take the first one from Reuven and give it to Yosef? Because the first one is first one. It says you shouldn't... You know, it says that you cannot love one son more than the other. The first one is the first one.
Right. But Yosef was the firstborn from Rachel, right?
Yeah.
And it's a verse in Chronicles. It's a verse in Divrei Hayomim. I don't know if I'm going to find it so fast. Let's see. Right, so I think from that verse we see the answer, but I don't want to say it unless I see the verse inside to make sure I'm remembering correctly. Give me 1 second. Okay, I'm not finding it right now. Should be here, but I'm not finding it. I'm not finding it. Top. Not finding it. Okay. Tough. Remind me. Well, I owe you an answer. Okay. Let's say it here. It says, "Uvnei Reuven b'chor Yisrael ki hu habechor uvchalo yitzuei aviv nitena b'chorto livnei Yosef nisrael v'lo litiches labchora ki yudah kvar b'cham v'nagid v'enu v'avcha li Yosef." Now, say I didn't remember it right. Okay. Now, from the pasuk you hear, I don't see how you could tell. It says it was given. I had in mind that it was given from above. But no, it doesn't say who gave it. It just says it was given to the sons of Yosef. No. Okay. I don't know. We have to look. Yosef has dreams, and for whatever reason, Yosef feels that the brothers have to know the dreams, and that the dreams are telling them a direction they're going to go. Yosef's dreams are right. They're all going to come true. But Yosef had an understanding in the dreams that the dreams had to come true. He had to see them to their fruition. You see that even Yaakov, as he's yelling at Yosef, Yaakov also feels, wait, if this is what he's dreaming, this is where he's headed. And to a certain degree, what the dreams are really telling them is that this isn't only Yaakov who has placed Yosef above you. Up above, they have placed Yosef above you. And what do the brothers answer Yosef? This has nothing to do with up above. We have a rule. You dream at night what you've been thinking about by day. The Talmud tells us there was once a king who called in one of the rabbis and said, "You have to tell me what I'm going to dream about tonight." So that's worse than Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar told Daniel and the wise men, "You have to tell me what I already dreamt." But he's telling him, "You tell me in advance what I'm going to dream about tonight." So the rabbi told him, "Well, there's this neighboring country that's a threat to you, and you're going to dream about a war with them." So all day long, he kept thinking, "Oh boy, I'm going to dream about war with them." So that's what he thought about at night. So the Talmud says that you dream about at night what you're worried about by day. What your innermost thoughts are about by day, that's what comes out at night. So the brothers tell Yosef, "Of course you dreamt you're going to be king. You spend your whole day conniving about us, thinking about us, plotting about us. So yeah, that's what you dreamt at night. That doesn't mean anything. On the contrary, it only shows what you've been conniving, what you've been thinking all along. You think you're the boss. You think that you're going to take the kingship by force or by merit, but you think you're going to get there." So the brothers go out to shepherd the sheep out in Shechem. Why are they going to Shechem? So Chazal tell us that was a mistake. Shechem historically was a trouble zone for Israel. Throughout our history, it's in Shechem that the brothers will sell Yosef, and it's in Shechem that the kingdom of Israel is ultimately divided. Shechem has always been a source of divisiveness for us. And so Yaakov calls in Yosef and says, "Your brothers are watching the sheep there. I want to send you to them." And the pasuk doesn't tell us why initially. Yosef says, "Whatever you want, Dad." And then he says, "I want you to see how they're all doing and how the sheep are doing." So the simple reading is, Yosef is again Mr. Supervisor. Go see how they're all doing. And the commentaries say that Yosef was one up on them. He was much sharper than they were. And he knew right away how to cure the sheep. And he knew right away if what they were doing was right or wrong. But that doesn't mean they appreciated it. And this is where our sages say, you see, that when everyone else is watching the sheep, Yosef's at home. He's 17 years old. Why isn't he out with the sheep? Because he was so smart. And it was worth investing in teaching him. So Yosef goes. And the final teaching, as we discussed last week, I think, the final teaching that Yaakov teaches him is when Yaakov walks him down to the valley. Did we discuss this last week?
Not that I remember.
Okay. So remind me, we'll expand on this Amir Tzashem in Parshas Vayigash, but for now we'll just note that the final lesson that Yaakov teaches Yosef is that when Yosef leaves, he walks him down to the valley. We have a halacha that the courts are responsible for the keeping of the Torah, the courts are responsible for the smooth running of society, the courts are responsible to ensure that when you have a guest, you don't let him leave the city alone. You walk him out, You walk him out, and if there's a dangerous neighborhood, you walk him through the neighborhood. You don't just let him get lost and discover Harlem for himself. You walk with him. And so when you walk, you're going to know where you should walk, where you shouldn't walk, where the gunfights are and where not. I remember I had a student who came to school one day and said, you know, every day people get shot in our parking lot. I used to teach in the Lower East Side. So I said to myself, I made a mental note. Don't give him a ride home. I remember once I gave him a ride home. I'm looking to my left, my right. These people with hoods on and everything. I asked him, you know, how do I get out of here? where's the safe way out? He lived in a bad neighborhood. So that's the last lesson that Yaakov teaches Yosef. You accompany someone. And Yosef's going to remember that lesson for the rest of his life, as we will see. And it didn't help. We have a tradition that the man who finds him getting lost in the field is an angel. The angel is sent, Gavriel is sent, to ensure that Yosef comes to his brothers. Meaning, just as certain occurrences in the Tanakh, we have a tradition that God intervened and said, I want this to happen. God wanted the meeting between Yosef and his brothers to happen. And the brothers see him from afar. And Shimon and Levi start talking. There's the dreamer. Let's sick the dogs at him. They'll tear him to pieces. And they pull their arrow. And Shimon says to Levi, shoot him. Knock him dead now. Shimon and Levi are talking between them. They have come to the conclusion, the brothers together, that Yosef is endangering the future of the Jewish people. And they're not far from the truth. Because Yaakov's focus on Yosef has placed them at a point where they're saying, wait, we're not bad, we're good. And Yaakov isn't seeing that we're good. What our father's seeing is that Yosef's better. And they've come to a conclusion which on the surface seems far out, and on some level was mistaken, but it wasn't as simple as it seems. Because they, as the brothers are sitting there talking, the brothers have come to a conclusion, he deserves the death penalty. He is trying to destroy our future spiritually. We have a concept of a rodef. We have a concept of if one person, Jew or non-Jew, is chasing someone else to kill them, so you kill that person. This is a halacha, it's an obvious halacha. You know, if someone's coming to kill a person, so he kills him. And if someone else could save him, so that someone else kills him. That's called a rodef. Now here we have another idea. Is Yosef a rodef physically? Is he trying to kill him physically or spiritually? So that's the whole question. Which is a greater celebration, Hanukkah or Purim? Our assumption is Purim. Purim, they wanted us all dead. Comes along the Taz and Shulchan Aruch and says, no, what are you talking about? If they only tried to kill our bodies, so fine, that's killing us in this world. But in Hanukkah, they wanted to destroy our souls. What good is their body if your whole life is immoral? So Hanukkah is a greater celebration, because in Hanukkah, they wanted to destroy all of Judaism. Purim, so they were out to kill us. So that's that seems to be a greater threat, and according to some commentaries, it is. But the Taz claims, no, the greater threat is to our soul. At any rate, the brothers come to this conclusion. And after they're going to do whatever they do to Yosef, they join in a pact and they place a halachic ban that no one can reveal to Yaakov what happened here. And God joins in their ban. If they were so wrong, why does God join in the ban? And our tradition is they were nine, they couldn't do it alone. They did it with Hashem. So that's also what we see. The next 22 years, Yaakov doesn't get prophecy. Yaakov thinks Yosef's dead. Why doesn't God just tap him on the shoulder and say, no, he's down in Egypt, go pick him up? Right? That doesn't happen. So firstly, we've seen time and again throughout Bereishis that Hashem doesn't do that. When Sarah gets abducted, Hashem doesn't tell Avram it's all going to be all right. When there's the Nisayon of the Akedah, Hashem doesn't tell Avram everything's going to be all right. The great test of life is that we don't have that guarantee everything's going to be all right. But over here, our tradition is that Yaakov couldn't get prophecy because he was in deep mourning and because God agreed with the ban. Yes?
Just what they seem odd always, I've heard different explanations, I don't know if time's appropriate for it, but it was so odd that Yosef never got in touch with Yaakov.
Wait, let's see. So, they're plotting. And they say, there's that dreamer. And let's kill him and throw him out in a pit and say a wild animal ate him. And then let's see what happens with his dreams. You see, the dreams played a pivotal role here. And Reuven hears. And Reuven, who lost the most at Yosef's hands, Reuven stands up and says, no, don't kill him. You can't kill him. You can't. They're drawing their swords. They're getting ready. And he says, no. Reuven says, I got to bring him back home. So Reuven's the big brother. And Reuven says, you put him in a pit. He's out here in the desert. There's no way he's getting out. But don't be murderers. Yosef comes and they strip him. They tear off his garment. And Yosef's begging them and wailing. And they're not listening. And we know this from their record in Parshas Miketz. And in Vayigash, when the brothers are going to stand in front of Yosef as viceroy, so the brothers are going to say, this is all happening to us because we didn't listen when he begged us. So from there we have a revelation. What really happened here? The Torah omits it. The Torah spares us the gory details.
It says they're eating a meal, right?
Right? And they sit down to eat. They sit down to eat. And so that deserves a whole separate discussion about the custom in those days when they ate. There was a custom that... Okay, we don't have time for that. He's screaming and pleading, and they sit down to eat. So,
maybe it was a mourner's meal.
Maybe it was a mourner's meal. Okay, maybe.
Maybe.
So, they look out, and they see a caravan of Yishmaelites coming from Gilad. That's also interesting. Our tradition is that Gilad is a city of murderers, even when Jews lived there. And they're carrying with them all kinds of spices to take down to Egypt. And Yehuda tells the brothers, what benefit do we get if we kill our brother? Our sages say if Yehuda would have known that the Torah will record his conversation with his brothers, he would have pulled Yosef out, carried him on his own shoulders, and taken him back home. And even as a kid, when I heard this Medrash, I thought that the Medrash teaches us something phenomenal. If you imagined that you were one of the tribes, if you thought that for generations people will read about what you did, how would you behave? What type of person would you be? And maybe that's part of how we should behave. We should think for a minute. There was a saying when I was a kid, don't read a book or magazine you wouldn't want to be caught dead with, because you never know when you're going to die. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should stop and think for a minute. What? I think it's positive gava, yeah. It is gava. It is gava. But sometimes that's the idea that the Rebbe of Slonim writes, we learn from this week's parsha. That sometimes you have to use gava as a tool to fight the Yetzer Hara too. Because sometimes we tell ourselves, well, what am I? And then we let ourselves get away with a lot of things. Whereas if we'd stop and think, no, I am someone who's important and what I do counts and what I do matters. And it matters to the whole world. If Yehuda would only stop and think that every year all the Jewish people are going to read this line and say, you messed up, Yehuda. Couldn't you have done better? All of world history would have looked different. We wouldn't have ended up in Egypt if not for this.
It's better to be a Galvan than to think you're a Rasha, but you can take down your Galvan. You can work on your Galvan through Musa.
Okay, but there's positive gava. Person has to know that there is a positive approach of I am important and what I do will matter. And that's what drives a person to do what's right. If I think nothing counts, if everything's all gonna passing and fleeting, I can do whatever I want.
Is Gava really just when you don't give Hashem the credit? I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu was told that he was the greatest person that ever lived. I mean, you could say he knew that. Well, Gaiva is like not giving Hashem the credit.
Okay.
If you say I'm better than that, that's not, I don't think that's
well, Goldberg
negative.
Goldberg said that the gimel of Gehenom is Gaiva.
Okay.
Okay.
The Torah tells us that what happens next is Midianite traders pass, and here the Torah becomes very unclear. The Torah tells us they pulled him out. They sold him to the Ishmaelites, and they brought Yosef Mitzrayim. Who? Doesn't say who did it. And if you read the simple reading of the verse, What does the verse say? The Midianites passed by, they pulled him out of the pit, they sold him to the Ishmaelites, and then they brought him down to Egypt. It doesn't say the brothers did. The next time we meet the brothers is when Reuven comes to the pit, Yosef's not there, he runs back to the brothers and say, he's gone, what am I going to do now? And then they take the garment, they tear it up, they dip it in blood. Doesn't say that the brothers ever sold him. So some commentaries actually say they didn't. They looked at the Ishmaelites and they thought of it. Yehuda says, let's do it. But the next time they're going to come to the pit, Yosef's going to be gone. Sold by the Midianites who walked by the pit and heard a Hebrew boy yelling. And now the Ishmaelim with their dark skin come down to Egypt with a light-skinned boy. And no one wants to buy him because they say he must have been kidnapped. In a day or two, someone's going to come down here and tell us that he was never a slave, that he was a kidnapped boy. And Yosef is standing there naked, having been sold by the brothers for a pair of shoes. They each got a pair of shoes. And we're going to pick up here, Bezat Shem, tomorrow night.